Michael's so competitive, and I was not there for that, but it does not surprise me at all. And Michael's so competitive that if I'm not mistaken, wasn't LeBron called the chosen one or something at that time? Yeah. See, Michael's from the school where you don't do any of that till you earn it.
Welcome to the Sports Business Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Berger. You can find the Sports Business Radio Podcast over 14 years, 500 episodes featuring conversations with people like Mark Cuban, David Stern, Jeannie Buss, Charles Barkley, Jack Nicklaus, and Kyrie Irving on iTunes or at sportsbusinessradio.com. We're ranked in the top 100 of the business news podcast section on iTunes. Follow us in between podcasts on Twitter at SB Radio. We've been named a top 50 follow by Forbes.com for three consecutive years, and on Instagram at Sports Business Radio. Coming up on the show this week, Ralph Green. He spent 21 years at Nike. He oversaw football, basketball. He was part of the group that signed everyone from Tiger Woods to LeBron James. I think you'll enjoy our conversation. Lots of great stories from him. Enjoy this conversation with Ralph Green. Well, this is a lot of fun for me in studio, because we both live in Portland, is my longtime friend Ralph Green, who...
Blast from the past.
Yeah, you worked at Nike for 21 years, football, basketball, you're doing your own thing now, Columbia Consulting Group, LLC.com, we'll get into that, but... Yeah. It's been a while since we've seen each other.
You haven't changed a bit, B.
Well, you haven't changed either. And, you know, for people who are listening who may not know, I did some consulting for Nike for almost 10 years. So, you know, I'd see you on the road at football events, at basketball events, and it was always fun. Yeah. You have great relationships with athletes. That's one of the things that I always paid attention to is whether it was Michael Vick or LeBron or Tiger, whoever it was. You know, you develop really good relationships with them.
They're gold. Relationships are gold. Yes, that's they teach you that there. But also, too, you know, like this was a small town when you and I were first getting started. So it's kind of hard not to know everybody, you know. And you had Brian Grant as one of your guys, and he was my neighbor just out the back of my back of the deck. So we spent a lot of time together. And I think that's probably how we first met. But, yeah, I mean, I think that – you know, it's just like anything else. Things change, but that part doesn't. You know, it's all about the relationships. And I've been lucky enough to keep a lot of those relationships as I've moved to different places in my career. It's funny when you say 21 years have just hit me. I'm like, man, I might be old. I normally don't think of myself that way, but it might be the case.
So you went to Stanford, then you went to Columbia University School of Business.
Yes.
And I know you did some other things before you got to Nike, one of which was you worked with Hakeem the Dream.
Yeah, the Dream.
How'd you guys hook up?
Well, yeah, that crazy story. I was working as an agent, part of a larger agency on the East Coast, and I happened to have an old coworker who happened to travel to Vancouver and bumped into a guy who was in the real estate who had connections in Nigeria who knew Akeem's brother. I mean, it's a real domino type of thing, but it ended up coming back. Akeem was leaving his current representation and asked me to get involved, and we picked the right window. It was the 2 years that MJ wasn't playing.
Okay.
And Akeem will always say, Brother Ralph, we would have beaten him anyway. But, you know, and it is true. Head to head, I think the Rockets had a good record against the Bulls back then when Michael was playing. But the 2 years he happened to be out were the 2 years that we kind of popped in and started working with Dream. And of course, we won two, beating the Knicks the first year and sweeping Orlando with rookie Shaquille O'Neal the second year. So that was fun. And then I came to Nike.
The whole athlete representation thing has changed a lot. And, you know, again, you were on the road. You saw players from the time they were young to when they became pros. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about building those relationships. So either A, they want to sign at Nike, or B, in the case of Akeem, they want to work with you personally.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I think that the thing that's changed is I think the players have really done put a lot of effort in trying to balance things out. I mean, in when, you know, I'm a little older than you, so when I came up and went to college in the 70s, you know, things really tilted in the ownership's favor and agents. You know, there used to be teams that didn't even allow you to have an agent. you know, which is a lot of people don't know. And so that they're just trying to kind of bring that balance of power back, and into a little bit more of an equal footing. And so I've sort of seen that over the years, and sometimes the pendulum swings too far. I mean, I've seen guys come in, whether it's I'm working with them personally or when we were at Nike, same thing. They'd come with so much organization and agenda and so on, because they want to take control of their own destiny and not just be sort of dictated to by a shoe company, by a ownership group or whatever. So yeah, I mean, the negotiations take on a different, you know, it's different when you sit with just a kid who's just wide eyed and thinking, gosh, what do I do next? You know, do I sign a shoe contract? Do I go to a college? Do I go to a team? Versus sitting down with an entire group of lawyers and they have their own logo and their team, whoever. And, you know, you're like, you're dealing with another company almost. And that's kind of, you know, it's everything in between. But the thing that's got to be constant is the relationship. You try to get the relationship with the athlete and know, let them know, hey, we're here to make your number one, your job on the court, field, track, whatever, better. And then number two, you know, whatever you can get from that, glean from that, you know, sort of extend and carry through your life. So again, it falls back on relationships. It's just, you know, how you do it now is maybe a little more complicated.
The athlete as business person, I feel like MJ really laid out the blueprint with David Falk, his agent. Then Tiger, and Tiger signed a big deal with Nike. And a lot of people were like, wow. Nike signing Tiger to that deal before he's ever teed it up professionally, that's a lot of money to pay him. And is golf something that can move the needle? And then LeBron comes along. Mm-hmm. And I feel like LeBron has changed the MJ blueprint. And now you see a lot of athletes who are partners in their own business and want equity in their business versus, hey, just pay me money.
Well, yeah, I think a very good point, but I think that the difference, if there is one, between MJ, I mean, MJ now is old enough where he's got to be an independent businessman. A lot of what he does is not going to be connected to him playing basketball anymore, although that brand is very strong and is super big. I mean, it's bigger than LeBron's business. It's a standalone company. You know, Brand Jordan would be a standalone company. I think what's different now, what LeBron has done and what players I've seen, in particularly in my role now as consultant in the technology space, players are coming in as business people off of the rip. They're not, well, let me get the shoe company and build my shoe and then my clothing line, because, you know, that's sort of old school and it doesn't really work like that anyway anymore. And it didn't even work as much for LeBron. I mean, he's got a good business, but it's not Brand Jordan. So what happens is LeBron's built an empire that does a lot of different things now.
You know, right.
He's a media guy. He's investing. He's got a great philanthropy piece. I mean, he's, you know, very much a corporate sort of individual, even more so than MJ at the same point in his career. So I think that's sort of the flip. And now you see guys, particularly in basketball, because they have a little more money, you know, doing things like having tech summits and real estate consortiums,
right,
and VC funds. I mean, this is the world I'm in now where I, you know, I'll go to a, you know, we have a small startup VC. Well, how much money did you raise? Well, I got $25 million. There's three NBA guys behind it. Oh, wow. They, you know, they're into that now, and that's sort of the new breed of businessman coming out of professional sports, or businesswoman as well. So that part's pretty cool, but it's still relationships. I mean, at the end of the day, you got to sit at the table, and the first thing you talk about is, hey, how you feeling? How your knees? Great game last night. I mean, if it doesn't start there,
right,
you get nowhere.
It's interesting. I had Rich Kleiman, who works with KD, Kevin Durant, on the show a few months ago, and you know, I really look at that as kind of one of the models now. So, like, he's Kevin's partner on business deals. They're getting the creme de la creme VC deals brought to them. Does KD want in on Postmates, or does he want in on, you know, some of these other things that he's interested in? But not every athlete has those opportunities. Some of the B and C list athletes, they may never be brought in on a VC deal. So, you know, they're all trying to make their money last as long as possible. How do they do that?
Well, I mean, I think that, as you said, not all athletes get the A and deals from VCs and so on. That is true, but it is sort of a two-way street. It's kind of like, you know, the way I advise young athletes when they're looking at going to college. They're, you know, there are a lot of colleges that have football teams, not just D1. There are a lot of investment opportunities out there, not just coming out of the big venture, have Excel Ventures and people like that out of the Bay Area. You'd be surprised how much economic opportunities out there. An average, if I could say that, MBA salary, which is way more than I know I make, so probably you too.
Yeah, a lot more. Yes, that's confirmed.
There's things for you to do. I mean, you may not get the immediate phone recognition, but you can, if you have the right people working with you, you can find those opportunities and put yourself in situations so that whatever duration your pro career has, you can reap the benefits on the business side. So there's a lot of opportunities out there. But I will admit the marquee guys, a certain segment of them, are definitely putting themselves out. You may have read last August, Steph Curry and Iguodala and the boys from the Warriors, they actually got the little tour bus and go around Silicon Valley. And, everybody wants to meet with them.
Right.
Who's not going to want to meet with those
right.
guys, right? So, that's it is. But if you're, the 10th man on the Warriors bench, there's something out there for you too. You just gotta, be able to get with the right people and you can find it.
Yeah. JaVale McGee's got his YouTube channel on KD's YouTube channel. So, he's doing interviews from a parking lot he's doing fine with that.
It's doing great. There's no question about it.
And you look at I love the Road Trippin' podcast with Richard Jefferson and Channing Frye. So, they were part of LeBron's team and kind of played in his shadow, but they took advantage of the access they had to some pretty interesting people and put together a pretty good podcast.
Well, the thing that's interesting, social media allows, the saying goes, all politics are local. And what that means is, that there's a broad, celebrity is a broad thing, but appeal is very individual. So with social media, you could have, just about any player develop a deep enough base. And then from that base, you can provide content to them. And it could be quite self-sustaining. I mean, that's sort of the Channing Frye thing. I mean, I just saw Jerry Jeffries' fishing show on the way. And the only reason I knew that is I worked with good old Warren Sapp. He's a fisherman, diner, all that kind of stuff. So I'm like into the outdoor thing looking. I'm like, where did that come from? But that show was really, really good. Modern Fishing with Jared Jefferies. Great deal. It leverages this social, has advertising around it, product around it, travels around the world. It's not maybe as high end and as well known as LeBron stuff, but he's doing pretty well for himself, and he's cared for his family and provided coming off the basketball. I don't know how long he's been out of the game, but it's got to be at least 4 or 5 years. He's doing okay, and that opportunity exists for guys, and social media really helps guys put that together.
I want to go back to your career at Nike and dig in on a few things. So, the Tiger signing.
Yes.
I know you were, a big part of that.
I was there.
Okay. So when Tiger is announcing that he's going pro and, he had this storied amateur career, everyone's looking at him as like the next great golfer. What are the conversations at Nike about signing him and paying him an enormous amount of money and really making him a part of the business, much like the Jordan brand? Nike Golf was built on the back of Tiger.
Well, it's funny because this is the mid-90s, so we knew a lot about him as an athlete and his ability to play golf. I think the real calculation there, and I just got to give it to the cheese, Phil, it was his sort of vision that it was going to be a rising tide rises all the golf boats that we have. Cause we had golfers,
mm-hmm.
right? Curtis Strange, we had Nick Faldo. I mean, we had guys and we had product going back to the Air Wentworth. God, I don't know when that came out. I think that might've been in the 80s, right?
I think it was.
Yeah. So, it's not like we weren't in the business, but the entire business was in just a lull.
Right.
And there wasn't a lot coming out of it. There wasn't a lot coming out of footwear for sure. Apparel had sort of, beached itself on this kind of ugly non-performance thing. And there was nothing happening in accessories. And so it was really kind of the discussions were around, this isn't just about selling a few more golf shoes, can we just like bid a dose of energy into the whole thing? And then we'll take our chances and see how well we do, but let's just, bust the whole thing up. And that was sort of the risk that we took. And, Yeah, I mean, I think that it did grow Nike's business a tremendous amount in golf, but golf in general as well. And all you need to do is just go to the events. And, you know, and unfortunately, since Tiger hasn't been as dominant, you know, the events have suffered. I mean, I think it's a, you know, the rare athlete that does that, you know, that can bring people. I mean, I'm not a golfer. I played for years after that.
Right.
I eventually quit again. I went back to my normal self. But, I mean, it's just, you know, the rare athlete that can really transform a sport into something that all of a sudden a lot of people are interested in and that weren't normally interested before.
I mean, to me, the two greatest endorsement signings in sports history, MJ, which, by the way, MJ wore Adidas before he became a Nike.
Converse, too.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And then Tiger, because right. Tiger really, like you said, changed golf, made golf cool. The casual golfer was like, hey, I may not be very good, but I'm going to put on some Tiger Woods apparel, whether it's shoes or apparel, and you know, it made people tune into golf. Oh, when Tiger was playing, it was must-see TV, and I think that's what golf is missing now. So, all right, fast forward, and then you get to LeBron.
Yeah.
And you've got LeBron, the Chosen. He's on the cover of Sports Illustrated. I had a front row seat for that whole thing and watched, you know, Lynn work some of his magic, Lynn Merritt.
He was the best.
And
is the best, yeah.
You guys came into that game late. I mean, Reebok and Adidas had been chasing LeBron for years. Nike kind of came in third of those three. What was the conversation with Phil? Hey, Phil, this is how much we got to pay a guy who's never played in college. He's never played a game in the NBA. Yeah. He was a really good high school player. He's going to be the next Jordan. Sign him.
Well, again, I mean, I think it was, you know, I will say from the beginning, Phil did understand how good he was. I mean, there was never really any, you know, having to convince him of that. I also would say that, you know, you mentioned Lynn Merritt, who eventually took my job there in basketball when I moved on to other stuff. Lynn's done a masterful job. Probably, and you talk about my relationships, he's the relationship king. And that, is what got that over the finish line at the end was, you know, he just was a very trustworthy dude and that, LeBron family believed in that. The assessment there really is again, you know, how can, you know, if you reflect back on basketball in the late 90s and early 2000s, you know, again, sort of a little bit, it niched itself and was not as broad as it should be. Stars were, not as popular. We had a couple of kind of, you know, shooting stars, Vince Carter, you know, that type of thing, and but nothing really sustained. Kobe was at Adidas at the time, hadn't really proven anything, but he was certainly newsworthy over there. And then AI at Reebok. So, you know, how do you kind of combat that? But we weren't just looking for someone to compete with those guys. We were, again, like in the Tiger example, looking for, you know, a pivot point, something that would kind of change the game totally, not just, well, you got Kobe, we got whatever. We wanted to change the whole thing. So that was, again, the assessment. When you think about it that way, you know, then the what you think you'd pay and all that kind of stuff changes. And, you know, I think, you know, although there's been lots of stories, you know, we weren't the highest payer. So, and often we're not. I mean, I think that's one of the things that Nike's done. Even though there's a lot of money out there, we don't always have to pay the most. So, and in that situation, it was, you know, trying to navigate that. But Lynn did a great job. And at the end of the day, you know, it came down to the wire, but we got it done.
Well, the other thing that I've always said about Nike that you guys did better than anyone else is you didn't spend all your money on signing the athlete. You also had a hefty budget for promoting them. And, you know, I don't care if it was the Charles Barkley commercials, the Air Jordan commercials, the David Robinson commercials. You know, even I remember some of the tennis commercials with John McEnroe, obviously the Tiger commercials. You made these athletes superheroes. You made them household names, which obviously helped them with other business lines and other endorsement opportunities.
Yeah, that model then was really linear. You know, now it's way different. And, you know, when you sign now, you've got to, first of all, you've got to come with a whole lot of marketing kind of persona already.
Right.
And you cultivate that through your social media. And if it's a sport that there's a college, you've played in college, you've got that legacy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very powerful. And you know, it's just not as simple now as sign a deal, get a soft drink and get commercials.
Right.
It doesn't work that way anymore. So, and also I would submit that, you know, that sort of fame and business building potential is a lot more fleeting. You know, your window is really tight unless you're extraordinarily consistent and really, really good. Steph Curry, LeBron James. I mean, those are rare, rare, rare athletes. And so, you know, I think that in some ways, the previous point I made, all politics are local. You do have anybody can generate a business on anything. Small business with a lowercase b. The big businesses are going to be fewer and farther between. It's just harder to put it all together. It's just not as simple as, you know, I got my shoe deal. You know, Puma's getting back in the game. I hear all that. I think that's all great. But it's not, it is not like it used to be. And so it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. You know, they've dumped a lot of money and signed some guys, and Jay-Z is or is not the president. I'm not sure exactly what he is there, but it'll be interesting to see how that goes. The model's changed, though.
You're not at Nike anymore. Is there an athlete that you chased while you were at Nike that you didn't get that you're like, darn it, I wish I would have gotten that person?
Well, that I didn't get.
Or did you get everyone that you ever?
Well, I guessed wrong. I didn't guess wrong often. There are a couple that I'm glad we. I don't even know if I can get into that. There are a couple of high profile ones we didn't get, and we were right. And a lot of that, you know, in football and basketball, I mean, I know that talent pretty well. So I think we were pretty good. I mean, I think that the one athlete I would have loved to have worked with, and I think some of us at Nike felt like that, is probably Allen Iverson. I mean, I think that we probably would have had – he was very successful, and he was groundbreaking on the court, incredible athlete from one of my favorite parts of the country, 757. Shout out to the Tidewater boys. Vic is one of those. I think if he'd have been with us – you know, maybe some of things would have gone a little better.
Yeah.
I just really wish I had worked with him. I like guys from that part of the country, and I relate well to him. So that one I wish we would have gotten. Generally, I mean, we did pretty good.
You did pretty good.
I was there during the hockey stick up. Things were pretty good when I was there. So
you just mentioned Michael Vick, and I mentioned you to him when he was on the show 2 weeks ago and when I met him at Sports PR Summit in New York, and he thinks the world of you.
That's my guy.
But how did you guys meet? And, you know, I told him he was the most exciting NFL player bar none when he was playing. He was not only the best quarterback, he was the best athlete on the field anytime he stepped on the field. He's like a video game.
Yeah, Michael. So there was a time, you know, I most of my time before I got into the business side of Nike was in basketball. There were a few guys that, like the football guys, would come to me and go, hey, we got a couple folks that need basketball treatment. Didn't exactly know what that meant, but I sort of understood. One of those was Vic. I worked with Marshall Faulk. I worked with Warren Sapp. I had Plex Burris a little bit when he started. Mike is and was amazing. I mean, you know, on the field, haven't seen anything like it, have not seen anything like it since. You gotta understand too what we're seeing in football now with the spread, and you know, there was a time in the mid-90s when, you know, Randall Cunningham was, you know, remember the ultimate weapon, SI cover. But Randall was a prototypical quarterback who just ran really well and was extraordinarily built. Mike was a different deal. Mike allowed the offense to actually change its structure. Randall played behind standard structures and formations. Mike allowed linemen splits to be wider, 2x2 sets. I mean, everything to be very wide. Because of his speed and his vision. See, what folks don't normally get. I mean, we did a commercial a while ago called the Michael Vick Experience. Remember that?
I remember it. It was awesome.
The kids actually thought there was a ride called it. And what that commercial tried to get to is not just how, you know, fast he was, but, you know, what he saw. I mean, his vision is incredible. And the thing that's cool about being with him now is the way he sees the game. And, you know, he's on Fox now doing well. And, you know, his insights are really valuable because he sees the game like nobody else. I mean, he really does. And he still can spin that ball, man. I mean, he throws it so well. And he does stuff and did stuff that you just don't see. Changed the way the game was played. Changed the way defenses had the form. And so on. And what you've now seen in football. It's sort of gotten really crazy now, sort of coming back. But the spread thing, he started all that. That came from him. Just wonderful to watch. And it's good to work with him. You know, it's good to see him kind of get settled and, you know, get his business thing together. We're working on a crazy project, this pro flag football thing, which is pretty cool. And, he's going to start on that in 2 weeks. So, you know, I'm happy for him. You know, he's been through it. He was one of our top guy for a good while.
Yeah.
You know.
When he went through his stuff, and he talked about this a little bit at our event and on our show a few weeks ago, but you guys had a decision to make. Mm-hmm. Do we stick with him? Do we not stick with him? How did you arrive at your decision?
Well, I mean, I never left him. I mean, you know, he and I have been tight through the whole thing and worked together through the whole thing. I think the company had to make a call with regard to how much commercial business would be driven, how much should be driven, because it was a very, you know, a very important and vital issue that is sort of surrounding the whole thing. And Mike sort of understands that and owns it and so on in terms of cruelty to animals and things like that. But at the same time, we didn't, you know, again, it comes back to relationships. We had to be a phone number that he could call, you know, if he needed something or just to talk. And so we maintained that. But, you know, we made the decision to kind of pull back on some of the business stuff. So, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, I feel like, you know, you can say what you want about how much he's paid or needs to continue to pay or whatever, but the guy's done everything that's been asked. He owns the mistakes he's made. He's, you know, everybody's got a right to try to provide for the family, and he's doing that, and he's serving the community well, and got a cool little family down there in Florida. And I'm hoping in 2 weeks he throws a couple touchdowns in this little pro league we got and wins some money. And, you know, if we go on NFL Network, going to be cool. And he's, you know, just at least he's happy and healthy.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's a positive.
Every man looks better in a tailored suit. Whenever I'm on stage at the Sports Business Radio Roadshow or the Sports PR Summit, I feel better when I'm wearing a suit that was made just for me. Indochino is the world's largest made-to-measure menswear company and has been featured in major publications including GQ, Forbes, and Fast Company. They make suits and shirts made to your exact measurements for a great fit. Guys love the wide selection of high-quality fabrics and the option to personalize all the details, including your lapel, lining, and monogram. Here's how it works. Visit a showroom or shop online at Indochino.com. Pick your fabric, choose your customizations, submit your measurements. I did that online this week. Wait for your custom suit to arrive in just a few weeks. I also just ordered the Tamworth blue shirt, and I can't wait to start wearing it. This week, my listeners can get any premium Indochino suit for just $379 at Indochino.com when entering SBR at checkout. That's 50% off the regular price for a made-to-measure premium suit. Plus, shipping is free. That's Indochino.com, promo code SBR, for any premium suit for just $379 and free shipping. Indochino, Indochino.com. Enter the promo code SBR. That's an incredible deal for a suit that will fit you better than anything off the rack ever could. When I was doing consulting for Nike, I was around the Nike All-America camp that don't exist anymore. I've been around the opening, the 7-on-7 football. Those are interesting cultures, to say the least. You know, there's this dynamic of college coaches there. There used to be, back in the day at All-America camp, there'd be NBA GMs there when you could go straight from high school.
Remember Jerry Krause watching Dirk Nowitzki back in the day.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. And I remember Amari Stoudemire. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it was an interesting culture.
Yeah.
Again, All-America camp doesn't exist anymore. What needs to be done to either change / clean up the culture? Because there's a lot been documented about
it,
and I've seen it with my own two eyes. And, you know, there's a lot of people that don't have the right mindset when working with the young kids, and the kids don't know any different.
Yeah, no, it was a good point. And, you know, it was – heck, they had me on 60 Minutes over this.
I know, yeah. I saw it.
I mean, I did everything from 60 Minutes, Wolf Blitzer. Oh my goodness, that was, it was crazy. And it never really, really stopped. I mean, I think, so there are a lot of things that are packed in that. I'll try to unpack it a little. In basketball, the AAU thing and college and the NBA all lay over the same issue, you know, which is how to leverage basketball talent. Leverage for the talent and the talent's family, and leverage for the teams that are eventually going to get the talent. So, and what happens is just marketplaces get created. So, what you're talking about, the camp system, is a place where good players try to get themselves known and seen. What folks don't understand is that there's always been camps, pro-ams, summer leagues. I mean, it's been going on forever.
Right.
You know, the shoe companies kind of came in and filled the void, during the time, but that, it wasn't like that stuff didn't happen before, and the money came from way more nefarious sources before. So, you know, it's gonna be there because kids are gonna wanna play and they're gonna wanna be seen. For me, there's a couple things that you ask what can be done. I think one of the things that I've always been worried about in basketball in particular is that sort of the pull apart from high school basketball and summer basketball or travel basketball.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this country, soccer's like that, but soccer's at a different place. I mean, soccer, club soccer's way more influential than high school soccer. You can say what you will about that. I'm a big believer in high school sports. I think it's the best thing in the world, so I'm always going to, you know, err to the side of supporting the high school. But I think in basketball, that has really been a thing that, you know, maybe you get the high school coach and the high school's more involved. That would help because it probably has more structure, more rules, and so on. The other thing is, you know, I talk about college and NBA, so you know what's going on with, you know, one and done, three and done, whatever's happening with the college.
Right.
And the NBA's putting the G League out there now, and they're going to expand that. So what they're doing is sort of, everyone's sort of polarizing and going to their camps. That's an analogy. Going to their corners.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the NBA's going to say, okay, we're going to provide an opportunity if you don't want to go to college and make this G League thing, and, you know, you can do that. And now, instead of, maybe getting more democratic about, you know, cost of attendance and things like that and helping guys with financially when they go to college. Instead, the NCAA is going to go three or none, which is almost like, you know, when I came out, when you had to play 4 years before
right.
you could go pro. So there's going to be a bunch of kids left in the middle, you know, and I think one of the solutions would be maybe, you know, if college was, there was a little bit more of a, cost of attendance. I'm not advocating salaries for college players, but certainly something a little more. And there's two reasons for that. One, I think it cures the pressure, you know, of you know, who needs to get paid.
Mm-hmm.
But also, too, it's just fair. I mean, to be really honest, you know, I sit and watch in another sport, football, but, you know, I watched that Alabama game and that kid Tua threw that touchdown. You know, he came through the Nike system, and I've seen him play for a long time.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, you're looking at that, you're thinking, man, this is the most spectacular finish, and the most spectacular because the broadcast, the sponsors, all
mm-hmm.
that money, all the school, the NCAA, and what is he getting?
Nothing. Well, I mean, he's getting.
He does get something, but
yeah.
the thing is it the same? You know, it's like when we're negotiating, if a deal's not fair, you always renegotiate. You know, and I don't know what the Alabama and the NCAA and the take from football was 20 years ago, but I can tell you that whatever their profit was, is probably 1,000 times more now.
Right.
The college tuition and support around that Tua would have gotten 20 years ago, maybe 10% more, 20% more now.
Hmm.
It's just not fair.
It's not relative
yeah.
to the increasing
That's
billions
the
of dollars.
Yes.
So, you know, I kind of think, and tell me if you agree with this, you know, and I had Mark Emmert on my show in December. I sat down with
yeah.
him in person in New York. Either the NCAA is going to cease to operate as a as a organization anymore, or you're going to have, you know, what a few people tried to start a year or two ago, kind of a union for the student athletes.
Right. Northwestern guys, right?
Right. And it's going to represent the athletes and get them what is fair. But The problem is this, and this is how I see it. You've got football and you've got basketball. Those are the revenue generating sports. Everything else that football and basketball make, they're paying for women's softball and women's golf and tennis and lacrosse. And so those sports aren't making any money. The two that I just mentioned are making all of the money. You can't really treat the athletes equally because the basketball and football people are generating all the money. everyone else is sucking up the money.
Yeah, I think that, again, you know, the old coaching adage, you can't treat everybody equal, but you can treat them fair. And, mm-hmm. and I think that one of the things about that is, it's funny, I'm working with a group out of Palo Alto that's considering forming a collegiate pro league, a club league around colleges. It's called the HBL. Historical Basketball League. And they, you know, there's so much going on right now. People are trying to figure out answers like to what you're saying. But one of the things that I've seen in the work I've done with that group is that you'd be surprised how much money football and basketball make. And the answer to the question is you can treat all college athletes fairly based on that economy. What does that mean? Does that mean, you know, full cost of attendance? Probably. Life or health insurance for life for all athletes? Yeah, that can all be afforded. There's a lot of money there. It's just a matter of how do you divide it up? And I think that those are the discussions that folks maybe are not willing to sit down and have because it really changes the model so much. But it is there. I mean, that Final Four in college football is going to be one of the most, second to the Super Bowl. I mean,
right.
Really, it is an enormous thing. And when you watch everything that spins off of that, you mean to tell me that not only can those football players not be adequately and more fairly compensated, but the Alabama swimmer can as well? Of course. You know, now, do they get the same salary or the same compensation as the football player? No, but they should have relatively the same level of support. And things like health care and cost of attendance are really, it's not as much as you think, and they make more than you think. And I think that's, you just got to sit and pull the Excel out and do the math and really distribute it equitably, and I think you'd get there.
Ralph, there was a story this week. There was a quarterback at Washington State, 21 years old, killed himself about a year ago. The studies came out that he had CTE and he had the brain of a 65-year-old man, 21 years old.
Wow.
You work in football a lot.
Played.
You played. Had kids who played.
My son's played.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you see any kind of a decrease in the participation of football, or is that kind of a fable that's floating around right now that, oh, my kid isn't going to play because I don't want him to have CTE or get hurt and wind up like this young man at Washington State?
Yeah, there's no doubt that participation is taking a hit. I think that it has come in waves. I mean, there was a real, real steep fall off four or five years ago. Then it kind of sort of stabilized. And then some parts of the country see it later than others. But there's absolutely no question there are fewer kids embarking on tackle football, and particularly at the earlier ages, because in most states, you know, you play between second, third grade start. Some places like my boys down in Dade County, they start them in preschool. But it's definitely have seen that. What has also happened is the advent of flag and 7-on and so on. You know, there are parts of the football participation numbers that have gone up. So, you know, overall, you're still looking at, you know, 4.5-5 million kids that are playing football at some level, at the high school level and below, which is a good thing. I think the sport is really, really, teaches a lot of lessons, but I think the concussion thing and the overall health piece is something that you can't sleep on. I mean, people are really concerned. I talk to families all the time about it. You know, am I worried about my sons? I do think that there was a change in the way the game was taught, and what will, as we now try to change back or make it safer, you know, you'll see some of those things I think start to reverse. I think in the late 80s, 90s, the head was bought into the game, certainly in the mid 90s. And, you know, and I talked to a lot of old heads in football. One of the reasons, if you know coaching, you taught, there used to be a way to tackle. You were taught where you bowl the neck and you strike with the front of the head and the chest and so on. That actually was done for safety reasons. It was I don't even remember Nick Bonacani's son.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so he had a spine injury back in the day. And so everything back then was, oh, we got to protect the spine, we got to protect the spine.
Right.
So it was, you know, bull in the neck and creating almost this battering ram effect, which involved your head. And then, you know, you get the ESPNs and all that would kind of, you know, glorify the big hit.
Right.
And there you have it. I mean,
yeah.
And when I learned to play, none of that existed. I learned to play using my shoulder and my forearm. And so now it's going back to that. Now they call it rugby tackling. Back then, that's just how we learned how to tackle. So, you know, I think that some of those advancements will have taken effect. And also the equipment, you know, I work with Vices, I'm on the board there, which is the helmet company up in Seattle, a great Northwest group of guys, and developed a helmet that's soft, and the NFL is now taking this, the number one ranked helmet in the NFL, and it's a, you know, total revolution in how impact management it actually absorbs. It really, you can push it in. It's like a it feels like it has air in it, but there's a cushioning technology. So that's helping, and they've got over 100 players in the NFL wearing it now, rolling it out. So, you know, equipment's going to have a part, coaching's going to have a part, and general fitness and, you know, kids being, you know, starting them later. You know, I think that's the big trend right now. Now people are starting tackle in, you know, 7th, 8th, 9th grade as opposed to 3rd, 4th, 5th grade.
Yeah.
And I think that also is going to – so, you know, I mean, I think the predictions that the sport will go away are a little extreme. But clearly a concern, clearly a participation challenge. But, you know, I think it will get better.
Just a few minutes left. Yeah. Kobe Bryant, another athlete that Nike signed. Businessman. Was with Adidas. You know, you guys signed him. He's now won an Oscar, and everyone talks about how competitive he is. Give me your best Kobe Bryant story. the clean
yeah,
ones that you can
say,
tell.
Well, no, actually, with Kobe, everything's clean. It's just a level of intensity.
Yeah.
Well, let's see. I mean, he was also good to work with. Extraordinarily competitive. Extraordinarily competitive. I can't stress. I think he and Gary Payton and of course MJ. I mean, a level of competition that, you know, would just,
they wanted to rip your heart out.
100%.
Yeah,
100%. I think the thing that I always, you know, when I first met him, this is like, you know, moment one. I introduced myself. Hey, Kobe, I'm Ralph Green, work for Nike. He goes, hey, how you doing? Here, you went to Stanford. I said, yeah. He goes, yeah, I could have gone there.
So competitive in the first 30 seconds.
Right off the jump.
Yeah.
And I just looked at him and like, okay, young brother, that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get started. Yeah, that was the first one, the first moment.
I've heard that he wanted an incredible amount of say and control in his product. Like, he was really involved. It wasn't just like, hey, I like these colors and throw my, you know, Mamba logo on there. He was like really working with you guys closely on his product.
He definitely had a point of view. I think initially, because he had heard that Michael was like that, and I think he wanted to do it because Michael did it.
But right.
He had, you know, he was much younger, had his own point of view, his own design aesthetic, and he hit it off very well with the, and he worked with a lot of great guys in the design world. Eric Avar can link some of the great minds we've had at Nike, and even Tinkerman. And, you know, Kobe was good. Not everybody can do that. I mean, a lot of guys go, you'll look at it and they'll pull out a napkin and little pencil drawings, and you look at it and go, yeah, thanks a lot, and you throw it away.
Mm-hmm.
But Kobe was good with that, and he made a point that, you know, I want to see everything. I want to be involved. And I think it ended up making better product for him.
You saw MJ. You saw Kobe. I'm not going to ask you who's better. But, you know, there have always been people that have said, like,
on LeBron. I mean, now the other thing on the internet is going crazy.
It's ridiculous. No, but here's my question about MJ and Kobe. Like, even down to if you listen to their tone and mannerisms in interviews, it was like Kobe channeled MJ. He wanted to be MJ.
Well, that was his
and
hero.
Imitate him.
It was his hero.
Right.
I mean, you know, if I made it to the pros and I channeled anybody, I'd be Dick Butkus. That was my guy. So, you know, but that's...
Would you be in the Miller Lite commercials?
Absolutely.
Less filling.
The first one, it tastes great. Yeah. yeah, I mean, you know, that was his hero. They're also physically almost identical.
Right.
You know, and I think that, you know, that says something about the way they played. I mean, the LeBron MJ thing is, you know, a whole different thing. And I think a lot of that's just generational and, you know, which is great.
So here's my story. And I don't know if you were there that day. So I worked the Jordan Capital Classic in
right,
D.C.
D.C., right.
And it was the year that LeBron played. Chris Paul was in that game.
Right.
Shannon Brown was in that game. And I always remember LeBron already had his own publicist.
Yes.
He's in high school. His own publicist. And they had all of these things outlined of what he would do and what he wouldn't do. And one of the things he wouldn't do is he was mad at ESPN because of Hummergate.
Right.
So he wouldn't do anything with ESPN. So for the course of the week, ESPN's following Chris Paul and Shannon Brown around. Well, LeBron gets jealous, and he wants to be part of this. Like, how am I excluded from this? And it's like, your PR people said you wanted nothing to do with this piece with ESPN. So as the week's going on, LeBron's trying to integrate himself into this piece.
Yeah.
More and
photobomb,
more.
Photobomb, baby. We call it photobomb now.
But I was there for the first MJ LeBron meeting.
Oh, they
Because they take the one-on-one pictures and shake hands, and they do the group picture. And I got to tell you, even at that point, you could feel the tension. You could feel the iciness. You could feel like MJ's literally the king at that point. And the guy who wants to be king walks in like he owns the place. And it didn't set well with MJ. And they smiled for the picture. But you could feel, if you were in that room, that there was a discord there. And I got to tell you, I still feel it. I still feel like, you know, MJ, who wants to rip your throat out, who wants to be the best, he's like, how dare this guy, no matter how old he is now and no matter what he's done, try and challenge me for the throne?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, Michael's so competitive, and I was not there for that, but it does not surprise me at all. And Michael's so competitive that, if I'm not mistaken, wasn't LeBron called the chosen one or something at that time?
Yeah.
Yeah, see, Michael's from the school where you don't do any of that till you earn it, right?
So he didn't like it.
You know, and that's, but, you know, it is what it is. That's why I said a lot of this is generational. I mean, like, kids today think, oh, it's all about LeBron and so on. And for me, I just like the, I love debates like that because I think it's just the thing. It's one of the best things about sports. I have my own opinion.
Well, the one thing you can't debate, and you already said it earlier in the interview, the Jordan brand has been one of the most successful brands that Nike's ever started and has done better than what LeBron has done as far as if you're just going to compare sales to sales, MJ has beaten LeBron pretty handily.
Yeah, and there's one thing you got to say even before that that you can't compare.
Six.
That's right.
6-0,
that's
by
right.
the way.
That's right.
Yeah, no,
so,
MJ school. I'll, like if you're going to ask who's the greatest of all time, I'm voting MJ every time.
Yeah.
And I don't even know if LeBron's second in my mind.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, this is a debate for
it's just
for
a,
the
great,
ages.
It's a great topic. But once you lay those two things out that you just said,
you
can argue about anything else you want. But honestly, the rest of it don't matter.
Right.
I mean, it
so before
matter.
We wrap, Columbia Consulting Group, you can go to Columbia Consulting Group, LLC.com. Learn more about what you're doing, but give our audience a little bit of an overview of what you are doing post Nike.
Yeah, well, the thing for me has all been technology. And, you know, as I saw the rise of technology brands, not only on the media side, but really in sports performance. I don't know if you remember Spark, but it was a little experiment we had at Nike. And I was really involved in that. And that was just the way to kind of quantify and identify sports performance. And I took that and made a business out of it. And there's a lot of companies, whether it's, you know, performance and material companies like Vices are making helmets or companies that are trying to monitor athlete performance.
Analytics are huge.
Analytics are the thing. Another thing that you will see balance of power and influence, you know, right now I think the owners and the teams are a little bit more ahead. They're capturing motion and biological data and all this stuff. I think the athletes need to get a little more. You know, and some of those NBA guys are into that.
Right.
You know, they're starting to understand their own data and their own the value of the data that they produce. But, you know, I think that's the next frontier. It reminds me a lot of the shoe business when the shoe business was considered technology. It's kind of so much marketing now, but early in the days when we first came up with the airbag and shocks and things like that, when it was real tech, I mean, it was science.
Right.
Right. That's where this sort of tech sports performance space is right now. So it's really cool. I'm doing a lot with it, and it's keeping me busy. I got my sons working with me, which is fantastic.
That's awesome.
And it's been wonderful.
You're a great dad.
Oh, thanks.
No, you really are. And I look at your kids.
When you last time you saw them, they were
I know, but I follow you on Facebook, and I see what they've done. And, you know, you should be really proud.
You
know, to me, like I always say, anyone who listens to this show, and Griggs is the same way, like being a dad, that's the most important job you ever have. Like everything else we do is a distant second, and you are a great dad, and you're leaving quite a legacy with your kids.
Well, thank you very much. It is the only job that matters.
Yep. Ralph Green, thank you so much for joining
me. It's good to see you, man. Good. Keep doing what you're doing, and call me if you need anything.
Thank you very much. You're listening to Sports Business Radio. We'll be right back.
Sports Business Radio is sponsored by Boingo Wireless, the largest operator of indoor wireless networks in the U.S. Today's sports fans expect strong, fast mobile connections at their favorite stadiums. Research shows that fans will leave at halftime if they cannot get connected, which is part of the reason why professional and collegiate sports venues alike work with Boingo to manage their wireless networks. As the world's leading connectivity expert, Boingo knows how to make a venue's vision for the connected fan experience a reality. They are the only company that can provide end-to-end wireless service so teams can focus on the big game, not on their network. Boingo designs, installs, and manages Wi-Fi and cellular networks at university stadiums like K-State and the University of Houston, and major league venues like Soldier Field, Phillips Arena, and Vivint Smart Home Arena. We're excited to showcase how technology is changing the business of sports, led by companies like Boingo. Boingo connects you to the people and things you love, like sports. For more information, visit Boingo.com or email sports@Boingo.com. Well, that's it for this edition of Sports Business Radio. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks to our show staff, Brian Griggs and Josh Blank. Thanks to our friends at Boingo Wireless for powering our Sports Business Radio Roadshow. Follow them online at Boingo.com or on Twitter at Boingo. Thanks to our friends at MKTG. You can find them on Twitter at MKTG. Their website is MKTG.com. They're a global lifestyle marketing agency, 33 offices in 19 countries, a leading sports sponsorship and activation agency. Make sure to check them out at MKTG.com. A podcast reminder, you can catch our show on demand via podcast. Go to iTunes, type in Sports Business Radio. We're rated in the top 50 business news podcasts. You can also find our show on Audioboom via the TuneIn Radio and Stitcher apps, and of course at sportsbusinessradio.com. Follow me on Twitter in between shows at SB Radio. Follow us on Instagram at Sports Business Radio. For Brian Griggs, I'm Brian Berger. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you soon right here on Sports Business Radio.
Sports Business Radio with Brian Berger.
Bringing you the biggest names in sports business.
Without further ado, we all know this gentleman. Let's give David Stern a big round of applause.
Let's welcome the president of the NCAA, Mark Emmert. Give him a hand.
Let's give a big hand to USC alum and co-owner of the Lakers and president of the Lakers, Jeannie Buss.
Thank you for having me. What a nice turnout.
Thank you so, so much for having me, Brian. It was very, very kind, and I really enjoyed it. Thank you, sir.
Sir Charles, how are you?
I'm doing good, man. How you doing this morning?
Today's guest is Memphis Grizzlies head coach David Fizdale.
You're the man, Bart.
My guest is tennis icon Chris Evert.
It was very interesting. You asked great questions, so thank you very much, Brian.
Pleased to welcome to the show Kyrie Irving, the number one pick in the 2011 NBA draft.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
I'm happy to be joined by Pete Carroll, the executive VP of football operations and the head football coach of the Seattle Seahawks. Coach, how are you?
Doing good. What's going on?
Dallas Mavericks owner Mark Cuban. Mark, thanks for joining me.
My pleasure.
Visit sportsbusinessradio.com and subscribe to our iTunes podcast.
Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Stay connected to the business side of sports only with Sports Business Radio.